Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I couldn't ever envisage being in a band with my brother. We'd end up fucking strangling each other, you know.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 19 of the Paul Ryder Tapes. I'm Angela Smith. I'm the ex-wife of Paul, who sadly passed away in July of 2022. In the months leading up to his death, he sat down with me and told his complete life story. All of the triumphs and all of the tears, with an unprecedented level of bravery. We finished recording just 12 days before he died. Coming up in this episode.
If anyone had said that we'd be buying our son for his, was it his 13th or his 14th birthday?
I think it was his
14th. Grow equipment, I'd have thought they were insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just seemed like the right thing to do, given it was the medicine that had probably saved his life.
Yeah, and he took to it like a duck to water.
We'd only just got in the rows of hell when we heard gunshots. Somebody up the road had fired a gun at somebody.
The next thing I really knew was, they were going to do a song with him, and Mike Pickering was going to remix Whim Away, and he was part of the factory team, and they were going to sign him and shit, so it happened quite quickly.
When I got clean, I think I turned to sex.
Right.
A bit of a sex addiction.
It's Paul on my shoulder all the time, you know. Don't make a dick of yourself, don't, you know, because I would, you know, and keep it real.
If you could go back and do your life again, are there some things that you wouldn't do?
I wouldn't have tasted heroin for the first time. That changed my life for many years.
Right, but then again, there's the argument that if you hadn't done that, you would have gone down a different path. Where would that path have led you?
Definitely alcoholism.
Oh, so maybe you made the right choice.
Maybe I did make the right choice.
No, I would never.
Alcohol's worse than any drug.
Well, in to excess.
Yeah, if you're an addict and you've got the addict gene like I have, then it's going to kill you. It's going to kill me.
Yeah. So do you regret picking up heroin with hindsight now?
With hindsight? God, everything's different, isn't it?
Right, but...
Yes, I regret it, but where would I be if I hadn't have done? What space would I be in right now? Don't know. Probably a bad space. But right now I'm in a good space.
I mean, I actually feel that people that have been through addiction and come out the other side are actually better people as a result of having gone through and done their work and come out the other side. Potentially.
You can't just stop. For me, I couldn't just stop and then carry on life. I had to have aftercare for me. People do stop and carry on with life and get a great life, but not for me. I had to have aftercare. And that is what made me who and what I am right now.
Mm-hmm. And part of aftercare is helping other people too, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I suppose just by being there for them and being a living example of it can be done. Mm. You can stop taking drugs and drink and have a life. Mm. I thought my life was going to be really boring if I stopped doing that. Mm. But it turns out there's not enough hours in the day for me to do everything I want to do.
Wow. Okay, so what are those things that you want to do?
Oh, God, just simple things, like go for a walk. Mm. Very simple things, like make a bit of music on the computer, mm-hmm. sit and watch a TV show. Mm. I missed out on so many films when I was using and drinking. I'm still catching up today.
In terms of, in the last episode, we were talking about Chico being sick. How did that affect you as a human being? Like, how did it affect you as a dad?
Oh, God, it was crippling. It really crippled me for a while, and I still got my head around it, knowing that he was going to get better. But when I didn't know he was going to get better, well, I always knew he was going to get better, but when he was first ill, it was like, I can't do anything. Mm. I cannot do anything. It's down to the medication that he's going to have to take. Mm-hmm. I can't physically put my hands on him and say, there, you're better.
But we didn't just sit back and keep our fingers crossed that Western medicine would cure him. We did our homework and discovered an array of natural medicines that we believed helped save Chico's life, including cannabis oil, which we gave to him in large doses, guided by the experts that we found. His oncologist was initially sceptical, but once he saw how it helped Chico as he went into remission from the cancer, he had a dramatic change of heart. As Mara Gordon, the internationally renowned cannabis expert who treated Chico, explains.
Dr. Fetterman, you know, he's such a kind man and he's such a gentle man. And I'm really glad that he was the one that was looking after Chico, because even though he didn't support cannabis and he thought it was just as soon to throw it in the garbage or flush it down the toilet as to use it to treat cancer, he didn't stop you. He didn't like threaten to call Child Protective Services, which back in those days, the little girl, for example, that Chico was kind of friends with, that's, you know, I mean, they were having to hide. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So Fetterman was definitely not an ally. He wasn't a foe, but he wasn't an ally.
Yeah.
And after he started seeing the results of how it was working to not only help Chico make it through the chemo sessions, because he said himself he'd never seen anyone suffer as bad of side effects from chemo as Chico. That he also saw that it had other benefits as well. It was helping his appetite. It was probably helping to kill the cancer. It was certainly protecting him. The amount of neuropathy that he would have had versus what he does have and some of the other side effects long-term of chemo, he was shocked. And so I had Aunt Zelda's and I started Zelda Therapeutics, which is now Zelira Therapeutics. And we were set up to do clinical and preclinical trials on various different types of diseases. And shockingly, he actually ended up being on our advisory board for this, you know, because he saw, number one, that we were serious, that we were not like hippy dippy, you know, grandma day bullshit. There you go, my swearing. I mean, we weren't doing that whole, you know, Rick Simpson, crazy, idiotic grandma day thing. We weren't using butane. We were using lab tested. Everything was like, he couldn't come up with an argument that we couldn't facilitate him having ease with. And so it was like it removed his obstacles. And I think that was really positive. And he ended up being an ally. I ended up sending him topical, a case of it for him to give out to his patients to help with the radiation.
And how did that make you feel that you couldn't do that?
Useless. Mm. Pretty damn useless.
Yeah.
I had to wait it out. I had to practice patience.
Mm-hmm. You were a bit of a mess, though, throughout that time. I mean, we both were, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind.
Hmm.
didn't expect that to come in my life.
No.
Yeah.
And what about the temptation to pick up and use again during that time?
Well, I had my little flirtation with the over-the-counter medication.
Oh, and also, do you remember his bottle of morphine?
Oh, no, tell me about that.
So Chico was prescribed morphine at one point, and I thought, I'm going to have to hide this from Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But you found it, and the level kept going down.
Oh, it was quite nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had a little slip there, didn't you?
I had a little slip with his morphine. I really wanted to try it.
Yeah.
And I did do.
Yeah. I hid it really well as well. I hid it in the bedroom in a cupboard under the windowsill under a load of curtains, and you still found it. And the level kept going down. I was like, I haven't given any of this to Chico. Why is the level going down? Mm. And you're like, oh, I don't know. I knew.
The curtain monster.
I knew that you'd had some, but you were denying it and denying it.
Of course I'm going to deny it.
That's like the insanity, isn't it?
Mm.
Of addiction.
Of course I was going to deny it. That was a huge blow to my ego.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. Talk about the over-the-counter meds that you were struggling with.
Yeah, you can't get them in America, but you can get them in... Was I going to England?
Yeah, you were. Don't say what they are, because you don't want to give people...
No, but they had codeine in them. I took a fancy to them for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And...
I mean, that medication that you can get over the counter in England was actually what pushed you into your last rehab.
Right.
Or not your the one that brought us to the US.
Yeah.
You weren't addicted to street drugs at that point.
Yeah.
You were addicted to over the counter meds that you can buy in Boots.
Yeah.
Which is really frightening, isn't it?
Very frightening.
When you think about it.
Yeah, yeah. They're banned almost all over Europe and in America. But in England, you can still get them.
Yeah.
And
you were on a lethal dose
these
things.
Yeah.
Because they also had paracetamol in them, and you were taking so many. I remember the doctor saying that you were on a lethal dose of paracetamol every day.
Yeah.
It's amazing that your liver didn't fail. I mean, you're like Iron Man, really, that you're still walking around, given what you've done to yourself.
Yeah, paracetamol's really dangerous. I heard a story once about this girl that took a paracetamol overdose, and they rushed her to hospital and pumped out her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
But the next day, she died because it had got into her liver.
Mm. Yeah.
You know.
It's really, really dangerous.
Really dangerous.
So, after Chico got through his treatment...
Yeah.
It was pretty rocky, wasn't it, at home? We had a bit of a rough time with... You were rocky. Things were not going well at home.
My medication from my psychiatric doctor wasn't... It needed tweaking, and it wasn't working right, you know. Eventually it got tweaked and sorted me out. But what I do remember from that period is he's getting better. Chico's getting better was he became an expert weed grower.
Oh, yeah.
And for his 14th birthday, it was like, what do you want for your birthday? Well, I want lights, an extractor fan, a tent, some seeds, some soil, and some kind of sprinkler system. It was right, okay, you can have exactly what you want.
Yeah.
And he grew his own crop.
Yeah, so we bought him... I mean, if anyone had said that we'd be buying our son for his... Was it his 13th or his 14th birthday?
I think it was his 14th.
Grow equipment. I'd have thought they were insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But... It just seemed like the right thing to do, given it was the medicine that had probably saved his life.
Yeah, and he took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah. We always wanted to grow. He was telling me when he was 11 years old that he wanted to make medicine to help other children. He couldn't understand why other children didn't get to access this medicine. He experienced firsthand the power of this plant as a... anti-emetic, anti-pain, and, you know, all these different things. He had experienced this, so he knew that it wasn't BS. He knew it wasn't about getting high. And frankly, if they enjoy it, that's even better. It's such a Western philosophy to think that you have to suffer to get well, that medicine has to make you feel terrible. No, it doesn't. Yeah, and we need to rethink the way that we approach that puritanical approach to medicine. So anyway, Chico wanted this greenhouse, and, you know, money's always tight or whatever, and you found this great deal on one that hadn't been used, but it had been taken apart and put together and was being sold as a used greenhouse. And my husband, Stuart, is, you know, can do anything. He's like a magic man when it comes to, you know, anything with his hands. And he said, yeah, I'll help you put it together. And then he's like, where are the directions? What directions, you know? So he and Paul, we sat inside and kind of watched them most of the time. And then we kind of sat and watched like it was an audience. I just needed popcorn for the show. Because Paul and Stuart and Chico were all, like falling over each other like a slapstick to get this thing put together, which of course they eventually did. But I think Paul was a little bit shocked at himself that he was helping to build a greenhouse for his son to build weed. I mean, to grow weed, to grow cannabis. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun that day. It was kind of crazy, but it was a lot of fun. And I'm so grateful now when I look at the path that Chico has taken and is taking in his life. He really got set up on this trajectory as a child, as a small child. And, you know, people say things all the time that they don't have any intention or ever doing. And he really is doing it.
Yeah. His first crop was incredible.
Yeah.
He tended to him like they was children.
Yeah. So did I.
Yeah.
Yeah. They needed a lot of TLC, but it was a really successful crop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He did really, really well.
Not bad for a 14-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You know, it was just survived cancer. Gave him a focus.
Hmm. Became quite an expert, really, in growing.
Knowing that I'm making my own medicine from it is really reassuring and just a good feeling.
Yeah, and it's well, that's what he's doing now at university.
I know, it's mad, isn't it?
What is he doing exactly?
He's doing cannabis chemistry and biology.
Yeah.
At the University of Colorado, Pueblo. Mm-hmm. So he's learning all about the science of cannabis.
Brilliant.
And how to grow it, and then the applications. And he said to me the other day that he's interested in the research side, which was really exciting for me. I thought that he was more interested in the cultivation side.
Yeah.
But he's actually interested in research. He's interested in working in a lab and looking at the medical applications of it.
Excellent.
Which I think is really exciting because there are so many medical applications it.
He'll do really well at it.
Yeah.
And even though it was controversial at the time, Paul and Sean's mum, Linda, and her best friend, Gaz Whelan's mum, Sandra, were fully supportive of our decision, and it even inspired Paul's dad, Derek, to use it when he was sick too.
How did you feel when we told you about giving him cannabis to help treat it?
Anything.
Oh, God,
anything.
Yeah.
Give him anything that would treat him.
Yeah. Bloody hell, I'll say, yeah.
Did you watch Weed the People?
Yeah, I did. And I've told 100 other people to watch Weed the People. Mm, I mean, when I watched that programme, you know, about the weed, and I seen him, I cried for a week. Couldn't stop crying. It's very hard to get hold of it. I think they do prescribe it for people with multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease.
But I mean, it's proof that how it works, isn't it? So what the hell are they waiting for now? It should be open to everybody now, shouldn't it?
Especially people with cancer.
Look at the way Derek went. I was just so relieved when, you know, we got the cannabis over for Derek and it was the only thing that gave him any relief from the pain that he was in. But like I say, when you told me about Chico and his cancer, I just prayed it had gone, it would give it me back.
So with hindsight going back now, how do you feel about having gone through, like, you know, God gave you this huge trauma to live through, which was your son potentially dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go back in time and wipe that clean and make that not have happened, would you do that or not?
Yeah, I'd wipe it away.
Would you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was too much.
It was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was intense.
I always said to him when he was sick, when you've got through this, we'll be really grateful for you having gone through it because
that's
of
true.
The experience. Because where would he be if he hadn't gone through that? Mm. He might be doing something completely different. Now he's got a life purpose.
Yeah. That's true. Hindsight's shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, it was horrible and I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but I think because he's got through it and he's in a really good place now, I'm actually grateful that was given as an experience because he got through it.
Well, we all got through it. It was an experience. I'd rather not have had it, though.
No, it was horrible.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's made all of us better people as a result of...
I'll agree with that. It's certainly made his life different.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, obviously, the outcome was really positive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's just interesting to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you could turn back the clock, what would you do? But we didn't have any control over it. No control whatsoever. Well, we did. We had control over what we did alongside the medical treatment. We're back again. We're in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Your mum came last week, didn't she?
She did,
what
yeah.
What was that like?
That was great. It was great to see her out of Manchester.
Yeah, what did you
do? For the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, I took her to the Roosevelt Hotel.
Yeah, that's where we put her and my dad up back in 89.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I recorded a bit of her going in and she got all tearful. Did I send it to you?
Oh, yeah, you sent it to me. She got emotional, didn't she? Good memories.
Yeah.
But they wasn't tears of sadness. They was tears of joy.
Well, but tinged with sadness because Derek wasn't there.
That's true.
I think that was the sad part, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's true.
We'd only just got in the Roosevelt when we heard gunshots. Somebody up the road had fired a gun at somebody. And I'd never seen a fire engine as big as that. I was in awe of a fire engine. Half of it had gone round down one street and the other half was still in the next street.
Yeah. Well, I had a great time with her. She stayed with you for 10 days and stayed with me for 10 days near Palm Springs.
Yeah.
Took her somewhere different every day.
Yeah.
Took her to the hot springs to sort her arthritis out.
I think Paul knew something was wrong with him because he would not let up about me going. He was determined. And he said to me, you have no excuse, I'm coming for you and I'm bringing you back. It was a wonderful experience.
Oh, you really enjoyed it,
didn't
you?
I did, somewhere every day and, you know, absolutely fascinated by the tracks in all the mountains that the Indians had made over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when he showed me the casinos where they all... You know, where everybody went to gamble and what have you. And then what? A few weeks later, he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
She cut her leg in big lots.
She cut her leg
in 8 stitches.
Yeah. We shouldn't talk about that because there's a compensation claim going
on. Absolutely. Quite right, too. And then the British Airways messed your flight up, didn't they?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that was a nightmare. Just getting here was a nightmare.
Why? What happened?
Well, we didn't know you had to have a negative COVID test within 24 hours of travelling. Yeah. So we was at the airport with plenty of time. But don't forget, she can't walk very well. And they sent us to the train station at the airport where the testing site was. So it took us half an hour to walk there because the moving walkways wasn't working.
Mm.
And that's like the fourth time I've been there in a matter of months, still not working at Manchester Airport. Mm.
And they wouldn't give her a wheelchair because she'd not checked in and she walks with a stick.
Yeah, and we couldn't check in because we hadn't had a negative COVID test. So we walked all the way over to the station and the place wasn't there anymore. They'd moved it to Terminal 2. So we had to walk from the station to Terminal 2. Very, very slowly. If it was on my own, I would have done it. I would have made it.
Yeah.
But she's like 80 years old and walks with a stick.
Yeah.
So we ended up missing our flight by 15 minutes.
And what did BA do?
Absolutely nothing.
Really?
Didn't want to help us, couldn't be bothered.
And they made you pay for another flight?
Made us pay for another flight. But I won't say too much about that because I'm constructing a letter to BA in my head as we speak.
So British Airways never did give Paul his money back for those two flights that they made him pay for after it was their fault that they missed the ones that he'd booked. So I think they should fly out the Rock and Roll Mums to Los Angeles so they can have a trip here together and we can film their adventures visiting Hollywood. How hilarious would that be? Does anyone know anyone at BA that we can ask? Yeah, but she had a really good time.
She had a really good time. Once she got here, she had a great time. It was really good to see. I don't think she'll come again. I think it was all a bit too much for
the travelling part.
All the travelling, yeah.
You'll be coming again soon, won't you?
No, I think I've had enough, Angela. I couldn't go through all that travelling again. But I've no sense of direction. No way could I go in an airport. I finished up on the roof of Tesco stores in Truro.
See what I mean? I
went the wrong way.
We could go to LA and go on a cruise to America, because I've been to America on a cruise.
Yeah, but I can't swim. I don't like...
Well, even if you could swim, you'd have no bloody chance if you say we're going down, would you? You couldn't swim anyhow.
I don't like water.
We'll try and get her to come on, but she's a bit shy, isn't she?
She was very shy, yeah. She has some great stories.
I know, sitting around the fire at night. Mm-hmm. I learned a few things that I didn't know about you.
Oh, you did, did you?
I did. I learned a few things, yeah. So what kind of music are you listening to now?
Oh, wow. I'm probably about 2 or 3 years late on these people. But one of them's Mac Miller, who unfortunately is not with us anymore. I think he was like 21 when he died. One of them's Mac Miller. I think Mac Miller was a genius.
Yeah.
Genius. And the other one is Baxter Jury, Ian Jury's son.
Wow.
I've just recently got into him and I think he's a genius as well. You've got to check him out on YouTube.
I will.
Yeah.
So who would you like to collaborate with next?
Oh, Baxter Jury.
Really? Do you think you're
going to
do that?
I'd love to. It's whether he wants a bass line off me or not.
Yeah.
But I think I think one of my bass lines would really suit him.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're reaching out to him then?
It's in the process.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whatever.
He doesn't know it yet, but it's in the process. Okay.
So if anyone has a connection to Baxter Drury, let him know Paul was a big fan and was hoping to work with him. And if he wants a bass line, we might be able to just dig one out for him. Whatever happened to Petula Clark? Remember you met her?
I wanted to write something for Petula. Do you know she's still alive? I think she's still alive. Yeah, she's still I think she's still singing.
I think it's really cool when people from different eras get together and collaborate.
Yeah.
That makes them interesting.
Pet Shop Boys did it with a couple, didn't they, from the 60s?
Hmm.
A couple of artists.
Well, the Mondays did as well. You did a couple of songs with... Carl.
Carl Denver. We did a song with Cal, Mr. Wimmerway himself, Carl Denver.
How did that come about, the Carl Denver?
That came about because of the Bailey brothers that made our videos.
And Philip Shotton was one of the Bailey brothers.
I was like a bit of a Carl Denver obsessive for some bizarre reason that I'd like rediscovered him. And I had an album by him, which I really loved because I don't know if it was nostalgia, but he just had a dead unique style called Denver and some great songs. So one day in the evening news or somewhere, we found out that he was living in Manchester and he was living in Reddish. So we got in touch with him and went for a pint with him in Reddish. And I was like, you're just great. And he's going, what do you guys do? And we told him. So I had a really good chat on with him and got on great, but it was just like kind of meeting your hero kind of thing. It wasn't anything behind it. And then probably the next day we told Wilson, oh, guess what? We met Carl Denver. Do you remember him? When were we? Well, he's going, what do you mean you met him? And he's going, well, yeah, he does the cabaret around Manchester. He's playing. We were going to go and see him in North Manchester. Can't remember. It was like a supper joint. It was like literally, you know, with your ticket, you got like scampi and chips or chicken in a basket or whatever. So Wilson's go, that sounds great. So we've all got to go. You know, it was like factory trip out. So I don't know how it became like the Mondays. I don't know how it became in his head, but he did take the Mondays and us to watch Carl Denver in the supper club. We were all, wow. And the next thing I really knew was, yeah, they were going to do a song with him, and Mike Pickering was going to remix Whim Away, and he was part of the factory team, and they were going to sign him and shit. So it happened quite quickly. And then, of course, they did Laceyitis, which was, I thought was brilliant, because it was where they dragged that song from. And and that was quite fun, because we had them playing football in the high concept for that was, we'd come up with a concept that they could maybe fit in with, which was in prison, in the rain, playing football. It's your only, like, you know, it's going to be a lovely moment, you know, it's your one bit of freedom. And so we had to get rain in Manchester, which isn't as easy as you think, because we obviously had to schedule it. So what we did was, this is again where we blew the budget. We got a pitch underneath the Mancunian Way in Hume, and got a rain machine, a guy from down south who was a rainmaker, and he completely built above the five-a-side pitch, he built a rain machine, so we had rain on tap, and later, and it's like, you know, prison guards and all that. The funniest thing about that was because we said, just get all your mates down, we'll have a proper kick around and stuff, and we'd got the costumes were like original Strange Ways prison uniforms, and I remember going into like, give them like their costumes, going, right, lads, you just got to put these on. They were all horrified. You know, it was like I'd really overstepped the mark. They were like, I've got to put these on. You know, the last time I had one of these on, it was all like that. It was all like, oh, God. But, yeah, they all joined in. And there's some good faces in that video. And Derek's in it. Obviously, Paul's dad's in it. John.
They was writing a movie script called The Mad Fuckers. And Carl Denver was somehow involved in that.
Oh.
And they wanted us to do a song with him. So we chose Laceyitis. And it was a really odd mixture.
Yeah. But it worked really well, didn't it?
Yeah, it worked. It worked. It's a good song.
And people you've collaborated with, Kirsty McCall.
Kirsty, yeah.
Talk about that.
Kirsty was on the first ever Top of the Pops appearance with the Mondays,
yeah,
with Hallelujah. She became involved because we got her husband, Steve Lillywhite, did a mix of Hallelujah and put Kirsty on it. So she ended up being on Top of the Pops with first ever appearance.
And what was she like?
She was great. I think she was pregnant at the time, but she was great. Her favourite thing to do was go in the BBC bar and buy a bottle of pink champagne to take home with her. Because the BBC bar was regulated.
Yeah.
So all the drinks was like 50 pence or something.
Yeah.
Bottle of pink champagne was like £2. So that was her thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you remember chatting to her about anything in particular? Or were you starstruck?
No, I wasn't starstruck. It was my first ever Top of the Pops, so I was just in awe of everything.
Mm.
You know, all I kept thinking throughout the day was, fuck, I'm going to be on Top of the Pops, which is what I wanted to be since I was probably 5 years, 6 years old. And what I've heard over the years was people saying, I watched that Top of the Pops, it changed my life.
Wow. Was it an era of live vocals or...? Or not?
I think it was all miming. I know Sean did do live vocals on Top of the Pops a couple of times.
Yeah, and how did that go?
Great. Yeah,
really?
He had his piece of paper, the famous one where he had his piece of paper with his words wrote on it. It kind of looked cool, actually.
But you were, as musicians, you were all miming to the backing track, presumably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was easy for us.
Yeah.
Have
you ever done a whole mime anywhere? Like even Sean miming on any TV?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like versions of Top of the Pops in Europe, especially Spain and France.
Mm.
We did a few shows where we mimed.
You did TFI Friday, didn't you?
I don't think I've ever done TFI Friday.
When Sean was interviewed on TFI Friday, when he famously swore and got banned.
Oh, famously swore.
Did the Mondays not play on TFI Friday?
No.
Oh, so what was he doing on there then? Just a guest.
Probably just a guest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you remember other TV? Did you do The Word?
did the word.
What was that like? That would have been all live, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was live. We had a nice PA system set up, that Oz PA set up for us in the studio. Mm-hmm. So it was like doing a real concert.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember who else was on the word that night?
No.
No. Did you meet Terry?
I don't think I spoke to him that night, but I've met him on lots of occasions.
Well, you did his show, didn't you, on ITV?
Yes,
with
we
Big
did.
Arm.
Yes, we did. Something else I forgot about.
Good. We've talked about that before, then.
Yeah.
Well, you had five outfits, and we recorded all the bits in one day, and then just rotated them because we didn't have a
clever
decent
idea.
Budget,
was that you?
Yeah, of course it was. What other memorable TV shows have you done?
Ooh.
The Other Side of Midnight.
The Other Side of Midnight. That was our first TV.
That was such a good show, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was our first
the
ever.
The very
TV.
First TV was The Other Side of Midnight.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that was a prestigious one to pull off. That was when Tony was getting into us.
Yeah.
And it was like...
I remember around that time I was producing The Hitman and Her.
Right.
And me and John Barrett, who is my mate who I worked with on it, we were desperate to get the Mondays on The Hitman and Her.
Oh, wow. We would have done it.
I know, Pete Waterman didn't want it, though. No. Pete Waterman, it's like, it was a step too far, I think, for him.
I think we would have
done it. Would you have done it? Wouldn't that have been brilliant, though?
Yeah, because we all used to watch The Hitman and Her after the Hacienda.
Did you?
When it used to close at 2 o'clock, and if we hadn't gone to a club, we'd get back to wherever we was going. Yeah. And The Hitman and Her would be on TV. Yeah. It was genius.
Yeah. We had to take that on before they were famous.
I remember that.
Pete wasn't happy about that, though.
Oh.
Because they weren't his, were they?
Ah, right. There wasn't Pete Waterman.
But much respect for Pete. I do love Pete.
He wrote some good songs.
Yeah, genius.
He wrote some really good songs.
Okay, so we're back again.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Did you have a good week?
I've had a good week, yeah.
What have you done?
I bought a miniature bass guitar.
A miniature bass guitar.
Miniature bass guitar.
Why on earth?
I wanted one for a while, actually.
Why?
Well, it was only $150 to start off with. And they're good for working out bass lines because the neck's smaller and you can get your fingers to different places quickly.
Is that so that you don't have to exercise your arm muscles as much?
It's even easier to play.
Paul's best friend, Monday's drummer Gaz Whelan, remembers another time when Paul didn't want to exercise his arm muscles too much.
I don't think he ever broke a sweat in his life, has he? I mean, I remember when we first used to go in the pub after rehearsals. I was 16 and Paul had been 18. And I just started smoking. Sean smokes, Mag, and I said to Paul, why don't you smoke? Is it because you're asthma? And he went, all that. To and forth with the arm, it's way too much work.
I don't understand, though. How could it be easier than what you've been playing for 30-odd, 40-odd years?
The neck is smaller and you don't have to move your hands as much.
When he was younger, I really looked up to him, you know. He's a couple of years older than me, I could relate to him, and I really looked up to him in lots of ways, you know. He was, I know this is hard to believe, but he was actually quite lively. he was... Don't get me wrong, he was never swift of foot, you know what I mean? But he was quite lively and, you know, and talkative and quick and funny and he was my hero. I'm not just saying that, he was. And he was funny, he was smart, I was well dressed, we got on, we had the same sense of humour, we loved music, he told me about music.
What were the names that you had for him that you've mentioned? Omar Sharif.
Omar, Alf Roberts, Schnorbitz, his best nickname wasn't even a name, it was a bass line. So we'd like, if we'd walk down the streets and we'd see like some like animated version of him, someone usually overweight with dark hair, dark skin and a big nose, I'd just go ding, 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 ding. One of his early bass lines was ding, 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 ding. I think the song was called Weekend Starts Here or something. We started with the bass line and Paul Davis would do it. So we'd hear or see something and we'd just go ding, 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 ding. And even now, see, he's not alive anymore. You know, we'd
we'd be walking down the street and something had happened and Paul would just go, ding, 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 putting my, you know how we put my voice on? He'd go, ding, 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 ding. And that was it. He had a nickname that wasn't even a name, it was a bass line.
So you've been writing new material?
I was writing new material.
Ah, okay.
On the computer.
Well, we'll play some of it later, shall we?
Yeah, let's do that.
So who are you working with right now?
Just me. Just me on my own.
What, you're doing everything? The beats and the vocals and...
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
You're singing again?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah.
And what kind of style would you describe it as?
More chill-out groove stuff.
Right.
Yeah, very chilled out.
What, like Café Del Mar?
Yeah, with spoken word.
Okay. Can you give us a bit of a sneak preview into what kind of words you're speaking?
I can't remember any of them. No, I need them written down in front of me.
Do you do it, like, off the cuff, or do you write it first?
Mixture of both.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we'll hear some... Can we play some of that later at the end of the show?
Yeah, of course
show?
You can.
Brilliant. OK.
Yeah.
Anything else you've been up to this week?
Just dreading this all week.
Why have you been dreading it?
Because it's Sunday morning, 10 o'clock. And you got me here to speak about my infidelity.
Yeah, that's true. It's been coming for a while, hasn't it, this? But we have to go there,
yeah,
don't we? Let's first of all talk about generally when you're in a band and you're surrounded by fans and presumably... I know you said you didn't really get groupies, but you did have a few. Like, is there sort of pressure on you to be unfaithful? Like, just... Tell me what your take is on infidelity overall.
Well, mine, particular one of them, was when I got clean, I think I turned to sex.
Right.
A bit of a sex addiction.
Well, that was the excuse that I used in order to be able to forgive you.
Oh. Well,
let's wind back and
I
explain.
I like that excuse.
No, it was. I think I came up with it and you latched onto it.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was when... Chico was a babe. No, it was going on when I was pregnant with Chico, actually.
Oh,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I didn't find out about it until Chico had been born. You'd relapsed and you'd gone to Eric Clapton's rehab in Antigua.
That's right, yeah.
And I got a phone call from a guy out of the blue and he said, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but excuse me, I'm not crying. I've got a frog in my throat. He said, but your husband's been having an affair with my girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what? He's in Antigua. And then I remembered that, because I used to always get the phone bills, and there was this number that you'd kept texting, like, an insane amount of time over the last few months. And I'd asked you who it was, and you'd said it was a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a guy I'd never met or never heard of. So I was a little bit weirded out by that.
Mm-hmm.
So then it all fell into place, and I thought, oh, wow, he's been having an affair. And I don't know how or why, but I called Rowetta or somehow Rowetta found out, or I don't know how we communicated, and she's like, I'm coming round with a bottle of whiskey. And so she came round that night and we stayed up all night drinking whiskey. And she was a really good friend to me that around that time.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good.
And so at that point, I think Sonny was two and Chico was a baby.
Mm.
So I think a normal person would have probably broken up with you at that point.
I think so, too.
Because you're in rehab for, I think it was crack that you'd gone, I can't remember, or maybe it was a mixture of several different substances, I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
But I decided to go to Antigua to go and participate in the family programme. yeah, and then I rationalised it by saying, well, you'd... Well, you hadn't got clean, though, because you were in rehab, so...
No,
but maybe when it started off, you'd been clean,
yeah.
So in my mind, you'd put down drugs and alcohol, but picked up sex.
Picked up sex. And eventually back to drugs.
Yeah, and then went back to drugs, so, yeah. So you were legged with two different addictions going on.
Mm-hmm.
So for good or for bad, we kind of got through that, didn't we?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify.
Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Why?
Yeah, we got through.
How did you feel?
Awful.
Did you really? Did you feel guilt?
Yeah, I felt guilt and shame.
Or were you not just annoyed that you got caught?
And that as well.
That was the main one.
No, the guilt and the shame was awful. Especially when I got cleaner in the rehab. It was a good job I was in rehab.
Right, but isn't that the one where on the way to the airport you relapsed again?
No.
Or was that the second time you went there?
That was the second time.
Oh, that's another story then, I suppose. So I don't really remember. You came back and then what happened after you got back? How did we get through that? Like, that's a really big one to get over, isn't it? But yeah, it was a bit heavy.
I'm glad I was out of the way.
Well, you weren't. You were back then at that point. Yeah. Did you ever see her again?
No.
Really?
Never.
What, you just dumped her unceremoniously? Wasn't that a
bit
harsh?
More than likely.
Wasn't that a bit harsh?
Not really.
I think it probably was.
She had a boyfriend.
Right, yeah, okay. All right, so that was number one. That was number one that I knew about. And only kind of much later did I realise that there were probably loads of others that I didn't know about. Just having a drink.
No, there wasn't loads of others.
Were there not?
No,
really?
Seriously.
I thought there were. So I found out about all of them.
Yeah.
Did I?
Mm.
Yeah, you would say that though, wouldn't you?
You did. You found out about everything.
Okay. So what do you remember about that period after you'd got back from Antigua?
Really, not much.
No.
I wasn't working, I know that.
No, you're in a bad place, really. I think you'd lost the band, hadn't you? You'd left the band because you didn't want to relapse on drugs, but you'd relapsed on drugs anyway.
Yeah.
The band actually wasn't even operating as a fake Mondays, was it, at that point?
Mm.
And I don't know what... Was Sean doing Black Grape? No, he wasn't.
No.
He was doing solo stuff, maybe.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a pretty bleak period for you.
Very bleak.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you slumped into lots of depressions and locked yourself away. The boys still remember you locking yourself away in that room, being smoking and being in a black mood.
Oh, in that back bedroom?
Yeah.
They remember that?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, God.
We were talking about it the other day, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. So then Big Arm came about after that, didn't it?
Yeah.
And we've already talked about Big Arm, so we won't go into detail about that now.
No.
So,
can play a song, though.
Yeah, we can play... Should we play... Oh, let's play a song to lighten the mood a bit.
Okay.
Which is your favourite Big Arm track?
Ironically, Love Is.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
OK, we're going to play it at the end of the episode and we'll be reminding you that the Big Arm album, Radiator, releases on November the 19th, but you can pre-order it from November the 12th, so get yourself a copy. We're going to also be releasing a compilation of other tracks that Paul's done outside of the Mondays over the years, and that too will be out soon. OK, so we were in LA. You were back in the Mondays. Everything was going really well. It was before Chico got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum came to visit.
Oh.
And we realised that she was starting with dementia, Alzheimer's. Do you remember that? And she came to stay with us for like 2 or 3 months. You were really good, actually, because you never once said, oh, I don't want to hear. And she was quite a handful.
Mm.
But you were actually really sweet to her. And she used to give you a really hard time. Do you remember her shouting at you in the kitchen?
Yeah, of course I do.
What did she say?
Well, I know what you're doing. You're waiting for me to wash these pots. I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
really right in my face, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. because she had to wash the dishes or something. What?
She just took it upon herself to wash the dishes.
Yeah.
My timescale wasn't good enough for her.
Right, so it was a conspiracy.
Yeah.
But during that time, you said to me, oh, I've got a... You were doing DJ gigs. Yeah, yeah. Tell me about some of the places you went to.
Oh, God. Colorado, Texas, Dallas.
How, like, was there a fan base of people that came to see Paul Ryder playing records in these far-flung towns?
The people was already in the club because it was that type of club, indie music type right. club. So the clubs was always full because it was that particular night.
But did you get people asking for autographs and things like that, or was it?
A few times, yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler Jacobson was a club promoter in Denver, Colorado, and he often had rock star DJs in his club.
We had one of the biggest club nights in the country of our kind, and we had Mike and Andy come through from the Smiths. We had Hookie out. We had, you know, Tim Burgess out on a few occasions. We had Manny out. I mean, we had all of these
amazing
people we considered just to be legends, to be gods. It was like entering Mount Olympus, you know, to interact with the people that we'd interacted with. And when Paul came out, and I just kind of reflected on it, and I said, you know, what more could this night possibly give me? And especially for a place like Colorado, it was very unheard of. It wasn't New York. It wasn't LA. So to be able to bring through some of these people who had never even performed here or hadn't performed here in 20 years, it was significant, I think, definitely for us as human beings, but also I think for the crowd and the city and really building up the night.
Right.
And it was a really special thing too. I remember Hookie coming out and being disappointed that he was up in a DJ booth and wanting things to be on the floor so he could actually interact with some fans. So I hope it was something that, you know, people like Paul found, rewarding as well, as to be able to interact with the people who've, you know, been following time. And there were some people buzzing because he was in there. You know, you do have people like me who we came up on all of this stuff. We still love it. I have a great photograph of one of my friends, Greg, just giving Paul a big old kiss on the cheek. Mm-hmm. It was significant.
Did you enjoy it? Did you kind of get off on the celebrity aspect of it?
I enjoyed picking the records.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy putting them on and mixing and all that.
Why not?
Just not my bag.
Did you actually have to mix them? Or did you pre-do it on a computer? How did that work?
This is the days before you could do it on computer.
Oh, okay.
Before beat match and all that.
Right.
So I did it manually.
Yeah. Did you get nervous before you were doing your DJ sets?
Like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happens if you put a song on and the fucking crowd just disappears?
It's like on another one, then, don't you?
Kind of failure.
And what sort of music were you playing?
Indie music.
Like what? Name some of the tracks that you liked.
Manchester stuff, a lot of Manchester stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of New Order, ACR.
Yeah.
And whatever was going around at the time.
If you had to pick one Manchester track that you would be your go-to, what's your kind of favourite seminal Manchester track?
It would probably be a New Order song.
Yeah.
Probably Ceremony.
Ceremony, you said that before, yeah.
Yeah.
We saw New Order here a few years ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
He's still friends with Bernard. He used to have a shop up the road from, or his wife used to have a shop up the road from your mum, didn't she?
Yeah, his first wife.
Yeah.
Sue.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've not spoke to him for many years.
No.
No.
Anyway, so let's go back. So you said to me, I've got a DJ gig in Portland, but I need to go like 5 days before the gig.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, this is what you're talking about. Okay. Let me prepare for this.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Go on.
So my mum was staying with us and she was starting with Alzheimer's. So, like, things were a bit rough, really, weren't they?
Yeah.
You weren't really working other than doing the odd DJ gig here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of struggling to make it work in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one night, just so we'd book these flights for you to go to Portland, and you're meant to be staying with your old tour manager who lived there.
Yeah.
And I saw this message on your Facebook saying, I can't remember what it said now, something like, oh, I love you, darling, and can't wait to see you in Portland. And it was the night before you were going. Before you were going, I knew that you were going to meet somebody, but you still barefaced denied it. I don't know how you got away with denying it.
I was assuming a good liar.
No, you were. Well, actually, no, you probably were a good liar, but I think I became kind of good at knowing when you were lying.
Mm-hmm.
So you went to go meet this girl in Portland. What happened?
I went to go meet her.
Yeah. How was it? Because it was like 5 days.
Yeah.
And you knew that I knew because I was phoning you incessantly the whole time.
Yeah. It was awful.
I'm glad I ruined
completely
it for
ruined
you.
By you. Completely ruined. It was awful.
What were you feeling?
I don't know what I was feeling. I was on too much prescribed medication.
Well, that was one of the problems, wasn't it? Because when you got clean, you were put on, I think, 7 different psychiatric meds that all were kind of interacting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I never kind of felt that you really were clean, because you were still being medicated, and those medications were kind of abusable as well. So you were knocking yourself out a lot with those.
Yeah.
No excuse for infidelity, obviously. So you came back from there.
Yeah.
Do you remember coming back? Do you remember how you felt on the plane coming home?
I really don't know. I have no idea. I had no feelings at that time. I was highly medicated.
So you're just kind of numb to everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I was in a different reality.
Yeah.
But I thought it was okay because it was prescribed.
Right.
You know. There was strong medication.
How did you justify going off to meet a girl?
I didn't justify it. I just did it.
Yeah, because my mum was still staying with us when you came back. So I couldn't even have a proper argument with you because my mum was there.
Oh, lucky for me.
And then she sent me a really nasty text. You sent her a text saying, sorry, I can't see you again, it's all over. And then she sent me a text saying, you evil cow.
Oh.
I know that was you. He would never have sent me a text like that.
Oh.
Do you remember?
No.
I was fuming. Anyway, so we got through that, didn't we? We went to counselling, which was probably a waste of time.
Yeah.
But we got through that just because, how did we get through that?
I don't know, forgiveness on your behalf.
Or stupidity.
No, forgiveness.
I don't know. I don't know how
very
you get through.
Very forgiving person.
Yeah, but or desperate to just keep my family together because we had 2 kids and I didn't want my boys to grow up in a broken home.
True.
But, you know, really, I should have left at that point, shouldn't I? Mm-hmm. But also, when you're set in a fixed life with somebody, it's very difficult to just break up.
Mm.
When you're a family and you've got a house and you've got a life, like, making that decision to break up is a massive decision and it requires a huge amount of effort.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of times it's easy just to forgive and try and move on because you're, you know, it's a kind of the lazy way out, I guess.
Okay.
Or the way out that doesn't make you challenge yourself. It's like the kind of the easy route.
Mm.
But I think I did it because I didn't want my marriage to break up. We got through that, and I don't know how we got through that, but we did.
Mm.
And then very soon after that was when Chico got ill. So any kind of marital issues were like completely irrelevant at that point. Like that was just all put on the back burner because it was all about Chico.
All about
and
Chico.
All about getting Chico better.
And rightly so.
Yeah. In fact, we probably stayed together longer than we would have done because Chico got sick. We're still on the subject of infidelity. Oh, how do you feel talking about this?
Awful. It's not one of my favourite subjects.
Paul and Sean's mum, Linda, and Gaz Whelan's mum, Sandra, both had very happy marriages before losing their husbands.
So you two,
both had very, very successful marriages, didn't you? Both of you. How many years did you clock up together?
Well, I was only 15. We'd have been married 62 years this year. Yeah. And Derek's been dead 5 years. 4 years now, but 5 years at Christmas.
So you did 57 years. And what did you do, Sandra?
We did 62, but I was only 15 when we met. Yeah.
Well, I was only 16 when me and Derek met.
So, what's the secret? Both of you answer this. What's the secret to a happy, successful marriage, would you say?
I think
give and take.
Yeah, exactly.
And backing one another up.
Yeah.
Even if you don't agree with it, especially with kids. Yeah. Backing one another up.
Everybody falls out, and you know, but you've got to me, haven't you? And you've got children to consider,
I mean, the number of times I felt leaving Derek, and I've told him, you know, was unbelievable. And he said, well, why didn't you leave me? Yeah. And I said to him, because I knew he'd only go and bring me back.
Yeah, I mean, but...
And he used to say, you're right, big head, aren't you?
No.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
No, but it's interesting, isn't it? It's something that a lot of people can relate to. It's hardly, you know, you're hardly the only person.
Mm-hmm. It's good now it's all over and done with and it's all behind us.
I just think it's really, really brilliant that we can sit here and laugh about it, really, or really talk about it openly and honestly.
Yeah. I'm just glad it's all over with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Monday's drummer Gaz Whelan still struggles with the loss of Paul.
He wasn't the healthiest man on the planet, Paul, so I always expected to get a phone call saying he's had a heart attack or something, or he's keeled over, and I kind of half expected that sometime. But when it came, it just seems weird. It's like, it just doesn't seem, you know... It just seems weird.
Do you feel that Sean has... It's affected Sean much?
I don't see much of Sean, so it's hard to say. And it's, you know, it's... I don't really see him, so I really don't know. I really don't know.
When you did the first gig after Paul had died, was Sean any different? Did he say anything? Did he pay tribute in any way?
I mean, he did pay tribute, but I can't remember what he said. I know Rowetta did. I've noticed. I say I don't really spend time with Sean, so I don't know. But I spend time with Rowetta, and Rowetta's, I can say it's affected her. We all used to kind of keep our own little bubbles travelling, and it's kind of brought us together, bizarrely enough. I don't know why, but we're more tolerant of each other. Yeah. You know, even more so. It's definitely had an effect. I've noticed it on Rowetta and Mark. I don't know if they've noticed it with me. In music, especially Paul, you know, they taught me how to...
how to be very, I don't want to use the word cool because that's wrong, but how to underplay things, how to downplay things. Don't oversell yourself. Don't do the big thing, I'm the greatest, I'm the best. Or don't do the obvious. Don't say the obvious. You know, don't play the game so obviously. You know what I mean? And he was really good at that. And it's hard to do these days, you know. It's Paul on my shoulder all the time, you know. Don't make a dick of yourself. Don't, you know, because I would, you know, and don't, you know, keep it real. And there was something recent where I throw something in live. I kept something weird on the drums. And straight away I look round to me, right. And I just get that glance off him. You know, he'd just be a look. And I knew the look would be, or it'd be like, you know, if he didn't, you know, and he just thought, Mike, and I still do it now. I looked to me right all the time, you know, because he was the guy who taught me everything. And I'm not just saying, it's the truth, taught me everything musically. He really did. We had exactly the same sense of humour, exactly the same. But me and Paul straight away, and he remembered, and maybe because me and Paul's only 2 years older than me, so maybe we had Mark and Sean are 5 years older, so maybe there was that. And I thought it's really weird. Maybe like my mum and Linda, we just clicked. We had our ups and downs, like all married couples do. You know, we fell out with her. But I think in all the years, I think we only had two arguments, and they were nothing. It was just me being neurotic, or we just did. I don't know. It's just a really weird. It was a really weird double act. Double act. We were like Derek and Barry. We could read each other's minds. It was really weird. Really, really weird. You know, we'd be walking down the street and someone had walked down, it looked like, and we'd just look at each other, and then we'd just say, you know, that's, you know, whoever, you know, and then look, just someone, you know, we just, not both of us would say it. We'd look at each other and go, and it'd be hilarious, you know, we were in Rill. And we ended up in this, we used to all go for weekends, this club, and there was just some bad cabaret on. And this comedian come on with a weird-looking face, really weird-looking and dressed. And I looked at Paul and he went, fucking hell, it's Humphrey Cushion. And no one knew who Humphrey Cushion was. And I just couldn't get my breath for about half an hour. And he looked like Humphrey Cushion. And I remember going, that's just the funniest thing I've ever heard in my fucking... It was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Coming up on the show next week.
The window was open and I crept up behind you and grabbed the phone off you.
I don't remember.
And saw
this
text thread, conversation with you and this woman.
Oh.
It was obviously there was something going on between you, so I called her.
We met Ronnie Biggs, a great trio. Well, it's nice to meet somebody who plays such a, a historical moment in British history. And we met Piers Morgan, who actually said I spiked his burger.
So it was like me and you and your new partner and her ex-husband and their kids all around the Christmas dinner table.
Yeah.
Which was actually really cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a really good day.
Yeah.
People still talk about that Christmas dinner.
Before drugs and everything, I was more of a beer monster, and they disappeared. And I wondered, why are they coming back happy? What are they doing? Well, they were smoking weed, weren't they? Didn't tell me about it.
The other project that you're doing in collaboration with Gaz is a movie.
Is the movie.
The movie.
So it's about a Manchester band who existed 25 years ago, and they're offered this great chance to get back together.
Right.
With unsavoury type manager.
Last time I played with him, he wasn't ill. You know, he was happy. You know, he didn't even... The thing with the fire and stuff, he just was like, you know, he wasn't bitter about anything, you know. He seemed to be fine. Happy with his kids, happy with everything, you know, and grandchildren. So, in a way, that's all, because you've got to look at the good things.
We're playing out with the track that Paul mentioned earlier in this episode. It's his favourite Big Arm track, Love Is, and this is a remix of the track done by Eddie Gromfier, who's a French guy he collaborated with here in Los Angeles. The Big Arm album comes out November the 19th, but it can be pre-ordered from November the 12th, so get yourself a copy of Paul Ryder's Big Arm album, Radiator. Please give this podcast a nice review and rating and subscribe so that you don't miss out on any of our new episodes. If you'd like to watch the video version of this episode, it's available on YouTube from next Sunday at 8 o'clock UK time, where me and Chico will be live in the chat, so do join us. Please support us by joining our Patrons Club by going to patreon.com/ The Paul Ryder Tapes. Go to the website, which is paulryder.tv, and check out our shop and bag yourself some Big Arm merch. And then come and join us in the chat on the socials pages. There's lots going on there. Big, big love to all of you. Have a brilliant week. And thank you so much for being here. Love and thanks to our guests and, of course, as always, love and thanks to the big star of the show, the one and the only, the late, great Paul Anthony Big Arm Ryder.
Love is a lover like no other. Love is loving you like a brother. Love is seeing you from afar, 'cause I hate you just the way you are. Like having some of these things are allowed and living, some of these things I don't like giving, some of these things I'm living.
Glistening Productions.
Paul talked about how significant it was that suddenly MTV were taking the band seriously. Do you remember that being a thing?